Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome you to another great edition we have here of Suspense Radio. I'm your host, John Robb. Today, coming up on the show, we have authors Lisa Jackson and Nancy Bush to talk about their latest collaboration together, second in the series, called Wicked Lies. And they're going to be here in about 2 minutes. And we got some other things we're going to talk about later in the show, so we're going to stick around because right now, 60 minutes of Suspense Radio starts right now. Great show with authors Lisa Jackson and Nancy Bush talk about their latest collaboration, Wicked Lies, which is available now, second in the series from Wicked Game. We have a lot of things going on. We invite you. Our June magazine is out. Check out suspensemagazine.com. You can get 4 free issues simply by emailing us, so look for that. What we have coming out, we have July set up coming. We're going to have Brad Thor, Marcia Clark in this issue. Yes, that is the lawyer from the OJ case. She wrote a book, Guilt by Association, her first fiction book. So that'll be an interesting interview. So a lot of exciting things coming up. But right now, we're going to jump right in and we're going to get with Lisa and Nancy. I want to thank them so much for joining us today. So girls, how are you guys doing?
We're doing great. Thanks
Fabulous.
For having us.
Yeah, so this is your second book. Your first one was Wicked Game, came out 2009, and you decided, let's do it again here with Wicked Lies. Can you kind of tell everybody a little bit about Wicked Lies and, kind of how it came about?
Well, Wicked Lies, like you said, it's the sequel to Wicked Game, and we actually, this is Nancy talking, my sister and I have been writing for 30 years. And so the very first book we wrote together was the first book we ever wrote. And we tried that, and it was rejected all over the place. I mean, nobody wanted it, but it did not stop us from starting our writing careers. But then, 30 years later, we decided to go with Wicked Game and give it another try. And we came up with this idea of this colony of people who have some paranormal type abilities, and they live together, these women mostly. The locals kind of think of them as a cult, but it's more like they've kind of protected themselves against the outside forces that kind of want to know what they're about. But one of their own becomes a villain in Wicked Game, and at the end of that book, he's incarcerated, and at the beginning of Wicked Lies, he gets out and starts to wreak havoc once again.
So you've kind of done a little different where it's not the hero that kind of moves over. It's the villain that's going to be the thing in the second book, which is not done very often and definitely not done as well as you've been able to do it, which is a really good thing. I mean, when you think about villains like that, Hannibal Lecter is one of the first one that comes to mind that's able to do and jump into those books. And so I think it's a really great, fabulous idea to do it that way because, quite frankly, I always find the villains a lot more attractive than the hero.
You kind of want them to be, you know, that sort of like, oh, I can't look, but I can't look away.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important for the reader to connect with the villain. And that sounds kind of weird because they're, in this case, the guy's just really a whack job. But, I think this is for the reader to enjoy the book. They have to know all the characters, and the villain in these two is integral and a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun for us to write, if a little creepy. And I want to make a little statement here. The Oregon coast is not as creepy as we have made it in these books. We've got a little, somebody said, oh, the Oregon coast sounds like a great place.
Never
want to
go there.
Well, you know, there's a lot of pine trees up there, a lot of greenery and things like that. And there's a lot of things that can happen when you get in the middle of all those trees and all those kinds of things. So, you know, I don't know. I like to stay down here in Southern California where there's a lot of people. I can see the games coming at me. I'd rather see what's coming at me than I don't know what's coming at me.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So, but, you know, and that is because it's true. When you talk about wanting to know the villain, like one of my favorite horror movies is Halloween, and it's not the gore and it's not what you see, because it's what John Carpenter did made you not see, which was, this could happen in your backyard, and you're sitting there in your car, and all of a sudden somebody comes from behind, you know, and kills you, which had never been done before. Now people, now you look in the back seats of your car, wondering if there's somebody back there.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you can find a good new way, yeah.
Right. Now, you know, the question I'm sure you've asked a thousand times, which I said I was going to ask again, because a lot of people, you know, like I said, don't do their homework and they don't read, but how or who was kind of the catalyst in saying, let's get together and let's do Wicked Games and let's kind of do this? You know, how does the collaboration kind of work with you two?
Well, we were going up the freeway to Seattle at the time, kind of going to a conference, and we were talking mm-hmm. together and working this out and thought, hey, wouldn't it be fun to try again, to write again? I mean, it has been 30 years, so right. How bad can it be? And we came up with the idea of The Colony first and then the first book, and we actually had some, there were some challenges writing together. Everybody has a powerful idea. So when we put together a 70-page synopsis, and so it gave us very little wiggle room after that when we actually came to writing the book, which was a good thing because otherwise you can spend all your time developing and you just really need to get it down there. And then we started writing. And I wrote first, and then Lisa came along. She wrote, read my what I did, made some changes, then went ahead, and then I came to her. So we sort of leapfrogged mm-hmm. through the book.
Yeah, and when we first came up with the idea, as she said, we were driving to Seattle, and all I remember is I was on this wacko diet, really, was it turned out to be. And anyway, we had to stop, make a lot of pit stops along the way at the rest areas, but during in between times, we didn't turn on the radio, we just talked out this story, and we kind of had an idea for it. When we got to the hotel, because we were going to this conference, first of all, we got so excited that we missed the turnoff to Seattle. Now, you know, there's like three.
How do you
cities.
Do that?
I don't know. There's a billion of them. But
I
we,
can see
oh,
you missing,
oh.
going to Timbuktu, you missed that exit. But going to Seattle, they got like 70 exits.
I know.
You
I know.
Really
and yeah, it is. And it was before GPS, and it's not like we hadn't been there before, but we were so into it that we had to turn around. And then since we were so far gone anyway, we decided to go across the Sound and check out some places in the Olympic rainforest to see how creepy we could make it. So by the time we got to the conference, we had a really good idea. The trouble began then when we started to write it down. Once we were talking about it, it was fine. But on the computer, I remember one time Nancy's up and dictated to me, which is unusual. It usually works the other way. And we were still working on the synopsis. And I said, we were kind of arguing, and I just snapped the computer shut and said, I think it's drink time. So we bagged it for that day.
It was definitely break time.
Yeah.
No,
but we're still alive, and we did it again, so it must not have been that bad of an experience. We really work well together. We've written books individually all these years, probably over 100 of them for the two of us. And so,
yeah.
And Nancy has been part of a writing team. She worked on a soap opera, so she knows how to work with other people. That didn't go so well either, but.
So it's always hard.
So if a listener is asking about collaborating, be very picky about who you collaborate with. And maybe a sibling isn't the first best choice.
Was it easier? Was it easier the second time with Wicked Lies than it was with the first one, Wicked Game, to actually, you know, get it going and get it rolling? I mean, how long did Wicked Game take? Yeah, I mean, how long did Wicked Game take before you actually got it done and finished?
Well, it took a few months. I mean, we have steady writing and back and forth, and by the time we were facing a deadline, as we always are, and there's something about us that we have to have our feet to the fire before we really get going. So it happened again when we were writing together, but we did get it done, and it did take longer, and it was a much harder birth than Wicked Lies, and I don't know if it's just forewarned as forearmed or what.
Well, we hadn't worked together, and the other thing is that we were working for a synopsis, and but the first time when Nancy and I were doing it, we were working from the synopsis, and we have the characters listed, but you really don't know them. But by the time of the second book, you knew a lot of those characters. They'd been introduced in Wicked Game, and we remembered them. They're not only the villain, but other people within the colony, some of the people sprinkled into the towns that we created. Although when after Nancy wrote the first section and I wrote over it, she introduced me to Cosmo, and I thought, who's Cosmo? Where did this guy come from? He turned out to be my favorite character. So anyway,
he had a bit part, but it was a good one.
It was a good one. So that also made it easier in that we weren't forging again to new territory. We knew what the Colony Lodge looked like. We knew where it was. We knew what towns were around it. And Nancy's famous for shrinking the state of Oregon to the size of Rhode Island. Man, our people can tear up the highways here.
That 101 is a freeway, I'll tell you.
Hey, that 101 is a freeway down here, too. You know, that comes all the way down here where I'm at. I mean, I live right off the 101, and that thing just keeps going forever. There's a lot of stuff that happens on that 101, I'll tell you. Of course, that's where, you know, James Dean died on the 101, so there's a lot of stuff that goes on there. But now, the other thing is that it wasn't Kensington who did this, and it was a publisher. It was called Zebra. Now, did you go ahead and you already had a kind of, because you were talking about that you had a deadline, so you had already written the synopsis and figured, you know, someone bought it and they're going to do it, so we're going to have to write it. But in today's day and age, if they said, you know what, we really don't like the idea and this and that, would you guys have done it anyway and just self-published it yourself with the ebook and said, no, we like it, and we're just going to do it ourselves?
I think we absolutely would today in 2011, because ebooks have come on wildly. I mean, it's a whole new frontier, and it does give the author the first time ever the chance to just have an avenue to put your own work up without a publisher.
Yes.
So, yes, we probably would.
And I think you asked, and we are contracted with Kensington Publishing. Zebra is an imprint from Kensington, so currently we write directly for them. If we would have taken it and put it on the Internet by ourselves, we would have had to discuss it with Kensington, because we – both Nancy and myself are contracted for individual books besides the joint efforts.
But in 2009, when Wicked Game came out, I mean, we wrote it before that, obviously.
Right.
Even then, this ebook thing was it was in its infancy compared to what it is now.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, now it's the number one selling format of how books are out there. Ebooks are now number one. And
who knew?
And
I mean, it's like, wow, it's been publishing has been the same for 500 years, and then all of a sudden, well, I guess not.
I mean, I've been telling people for a year that ebooks were going to be the big thing, because it happened with music, it happened with movies,
right.
It was bound to happen with books, which is the simplest form in order for people to get on things electronically. So, yeah, and I want to remind everybody that we're speaking here with Lisa Jackson and Nancy Bush. Their websites individually, you have lisajackson.com, you have nancybush.net, and people can find out a bunch of things on there. And one of the things they're going to find is they're going to see Sarah Palin in a video. Just joking. It's not really Sarah Palin, but it looks like Sarah Palin when you first look at it. I'm going to tell people that's what you're going to see. But there's a video that you put together here for Wicked Lies. So kind of explain why you decided to do a video. It's like a video trailer for the book.
You mean our film noir jail video?
We just called the jail video, yeah.
The jail video.
That was, believe it or not, that was concocted and constructed and filmed in one day while we were in New York for other business. We were in there and we were having...
I was having headshots taken by this photographer, Kimberly Butler, who is fabulous. And Lisa kind of came up with, well, can't we do something? If we were doing a video as well, and...
You know, authors on the couch answering questions, it was really boring.
And so she said, can't we do something like maybe an interrogation or whatever? And Kimberly just ran with this idea. Oh, I can get a jail set. I can do this.
I can get a toilet. I can get...
Right.
She painted her floor. She put... I mean... So we did it the next day, and then the kicker was Nancy and I wrote this script.
Yeah, we're just like, yeah, and oh, we'll do this tomorrow. Can you guys write a script? And we were like, well, okay.
Hey, Nancy, you worked on soap operas. You were probably all ready to go, like, I can rewrite it right now.
We sat down, looked at each other, and I was like, okay, it's campy. Here we go.
There we go.
And then when we got there, she said, and I have my neighbor will be
Kimberly's neighbor.
Kimberly's neighbor would be the police officer. When we got there, we found out the jail cell didn't fit up the elevator. They had to put it in through the second-story window. She had to bribe some people to do that. And then Leon, or whoever he was, bagged out. We didn't have an interrogator. So Nancy's husband just happened to be there, and we said, Ken, you're it. Tag. You have to do it. And he did a great job.
He kind of stole the show, actually.
Yeah, that's irritating.
So... So, I mean, and that's the great thing. You know, normally when those things happen just spontaneous like that and say, let's do it, that's typically when they just come out the best, because when you've had time to think about it, you can kind of change things and move things that just didn't quite work as well. But, I mean, it's like a 4.5-minute video, and it's right there on your website for people to look at it, and you put it on YouTube. And I think it's fabulous. And then now they hear the story about how it came together, it makes it even just that much more intriguing.
Good. It was fun. And then after we did it, of course, this was like 6 months ago, then we had 6 months where they were editing and going to get to it whenever. And so that, you know, like buyer's remorse, the sort of filmer's remorse, it was like, what is that really going to look like?
A load of you know what, and we have to then tell the publisher, we don't look too good. We stumbled over our line. But anyway, it turned out very well, and been a great response to it. And so I don't think that, you know, the stars of Hollywood have to shake in their boots that Nancy Bush and Lisa Jackson are going to start filming stuff. And I'm sure Sarah Palin isn't too worried either. But there it is.
Here we go. I can see it now. You're going to call it the Wicked Lies Production Company, and you're going to start going out, and you're going to start taking these things, and you're going to take it into Hollywood. Because right now, Hollywood doesn't even know what to do. They're filming the worst movies ever with all these great books out there and everything that they could put together into movies. Unless you're a superhero fan, thank God I am. 2011, this is not your movie time.
Yeah,
you're absolutely right on that. I was the biggest movie buff, and I guess maybe I'm just too old now. I'm not going to whip out and see Fast and Furious or whatever. Aren't they on the fifth one or something? Not my cup of tea. But apparently works for the young set. I don't know. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, they need to start looking at our books.
That's right.
I mean, I just don't get it either. And the good thing is that the tablets are becoming so popular that people can now, you know, get your books.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got them on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, Borders. You got them all out there, and people can get them right away. That's why I like e-books so much better than a hardcover book. And I've been a big proponent of people always know that I'm the big person to say, I don't care if print goes away, because I am a fan of ebooks, because I think it's instantaneous. You don't have to worry about if it's in the store. You don't have to worry about if your store's closing. That's the one thing that I don't like, is the store's closed, people are out of work, and that I do not like.
Yeah, but there is something to be said about a print book. I mean, holding one, I still like to, but I have to admit, I was at a point just even a few months ago where I was like, no, print is the only answer. And then, you know, after you get a Kindle or a Nook or an iPad or whatever it is, you try it a couple of times, you kind of go, oh, I see what the revolution's about.
Uh-huh.
Well, for the people with failing eyesight, or, you know, like for me, I like to be able to increase the font size. It makes it easier for my eyes. And for travel, if you're going, went to Europe, and I downloaded, I've used to pack around 5 or 6 books. I just downloaded them onto my, or uploaded, whatever, into my Nook. I've got a Nook. And it was great. However, I'm a big, too, a proponent of books, and I have libraries of books, and I still buy books. But I tend to, just because of my age, buy the bigger print books, the latte size. And so anyway, it's a revolution, and she's here now.
Yeah, yes. I mean, big time. Because we're on pace to get over 2,500 books this year to review. And I mean, it's just overloading. So I always tell people, if you have it electronically, I'd much rather have it that way to review the book than a hardcover, because
right.
it just makes my space easier. I mean, my poor cat I can't find because I'm I have the books around and I don't even know where the cat is anymore. I lose the cat. So yeah, and a lot of people are like, yeah, but they can't, you can't sign the book and the book can't be signed and this and that. Well, the one thing that I've noticed is that a lot of authors, and I don't know what kind of events, but are you guys going out to a lot of book signings? Because a lot of authors aren't even doing that anymore anyway, is going to book signings anymore.
We do, when our book comes out, we do a sprinkling, usually in the area. And mm-hmm. And sometimes we go to a major event like a library, where there's a sit-down dinner thing. But no, I used to tour extensively with my books, and I don't do it anymore. It just, it's a lot of time, effort, money, and really hard on you for little gratification. I did love meeting the fans. That is the one thing I miss. But then I go to the big conferences and meet them there.
Yeah. The big conferences are kind of still going, and they're fun. I mean, because a lot of authors, a lot of fans, it's great.
And speaking of big conferences, the one that's coming up here in a month is going to be Thriller Fest, and then coming up in October is going to be VoucherCon. Are you guys going to be in St. Louis? Are you guys going to be at those events so people can come up and see, and you guys are going to be together and promoting Wicked Lies?
I don't know. I mean, we're not going to be at Thriller Fest.
No, because we're going to
RWA.
I'm going to RWA. I'm speaking with Harlan Coben, who I just adore.
So
otherwise I wouldn't have even been, because that's in New York, across the country for that. So we're doing that in a few weeks. And then I had something else in October that just recently fell through. So isn't that when VoucherCon is?
VoucherCon, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's a possibility. We haven't completely... we've been to VoucherCon, but it's been a few years. It's just whatever reason, our schedules. But
October what?
I'm not sure when in October, because the last one, and I think we met you at VoucherCon, I believe, in San Francisco this past VoucherCon, and now it's coming out to St. Louis. So, yeah, it's always like the end of October. It's like right before Halloween when it comes out. But, yeah, Nancy, you're going to be at RWA, and Lisa, are you going to be there? Where is that at?
I'm going to be at RWA. It's in New York. I think it's around July 1st is when I'm there.
I think it's June.
So it's right before Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yeah, June 30th. I'm be there from June 30th to July 2nd or something on that Friday. Yeah, right before the holiday.
Right before July 4th, yeah, because Thriller Fest starts, I think, the 6th. And we're going to be up there for Thriller Fest because we really love ITW. Yeah, and it's a cheap way to sit there and say, yeah, we want to go back to New York because we like New York too, so that's good. But now,
right, we would have considered it, but, hey, I get to be with Harlan Coben. That's going to be a lot of fun.
I think you're speaking with him on Wednesday, whatever that date in June is.
Right. You'd think I'd know this stuff, but no. You think if you're going to be interviewed, you kind of have your schedule in your head, but no, and the computer's packed away, so we're just guessing here. The Wednesday of RWA. 3:15, I believe. That's about as far as I know.
So everybody, we're talking here again with Lisa Jackson and Nancy Bush, co-authors and sisters of the latest book called Wicked Lies, the second in their series. The first one was in 2009 called Wicked Game, and it continues along the lines with one of the characters from the first book. If you haven't read it, you can read the second one, but you should probably go back and read the first book, Wicked Game, and then get in here to Wicked Lies to understand a little bit how things move. Would you kind of say that that's accurate?
I think you can read them independently. That's true. But I think it's more fun if Wicked Game is first.
And Wicked Game is currently out. They didn't reissue it, but they restocked the shelves of the stores. And I was recently checked out Wicked Lies, and there was Wicked Game right beside it. It was cool.
That's good. And now did you guys have just this two book series, or what are you going to do in the future? Is there going to be another, and I guess we're going to call it the Wicked series. Is there going to be another
Get
book
Wicked.
Coming up?
We do have another one. We have two more contracted, and they only come out every other year. And so the third one will be out in 2013, and then I guess the fourth one in 2015. So
wow, that sounds like a long time.
We're going to be writing a long time.
And we have a germ of an idea for the 2013 book. We just haven't put it together yet.
And
but
now,
hopefully, yeah.
So the fans can know that there will be at least two more books in the Wicked series.
We hope so, as long as the editor doesn't say something like, well, let's just take a break from this series now and do something different. Sometimes that happens, but I don't think so.
It seems to be fairly popular. It's fun.
And now, individually, what do you guys have coming out? And I'll just start with Lisa first. Individually, what do you have coming out now that's available now, and then what's coming up in the future?
Well, we've got the Wicked Game, or Wicked Lies right now. My last book, Devious, hardback,
right,
was out in the end of March, 1st of April, and I have Born to Die, which is part of my To Die series set in Montana, that will come out in August of this year, and then I'm working on next year's hardback. So there's a lot going on, and in between times, Nancy, you've got books.
I have Wicked Lies now, and then next month, right on the heels of it, is Hush, my solo thriller that's set also in the Oregon coast, but doesn't have anything to do really with the...
Those poor western states.
She can't get out of it.
You guys are crushing them. So, well, girls, I want to thank you guys so much for coming on today and talking with us. It's been fascinating. It's been funny. And, you know, we will see you. Hopefully we'll see you at a conference coming up. And, you know, we'll keep, you know, further in touch about what's going on. And definitely stay in touch with us so we can, you know, keep going on what's happening and let the fans know what's going on with you guys, both together and individually.
Yes, and they can visit our websites, but we're also active on Facebook. And Nancy started writing a blog. I guess I have one, too. I haven't really paid attention to it. So we're more accessible than we've ever been.
And
that's a good thing. And that's what makes technology fun, is now you guys can have more accessibility than before.
Hopefully.
All right, girls. Well, thank you so much. Enjoy your Saturday, and I hope Oregon is never the same now.
And you have a good one, too, and I hope that your weather improves down there in California.
Oh,
great
I'm
talking
sure
to
it will.
You.
Yes. Bye-bye, girls. Have a good night.
Bye. Right, thank
bye.
You. Bye.
Bye. Again, everybody, that was Lisa Jackson and Nancy Bush. Their websites, lisajackson.com and nancybush.net. Their collaboration, which is the second book, is Wicked Lies, which is out now. It's the second book from Wicked Game, which was in 2009, and like you just heard them say, 2013 and 2015, if everything goes well, that you are going to see four books in the Wicked series. I do suggest, you know, you could go out and get Wicked Lies. They are standalones, but to get the full effect of what they've done, because they've done something extremely interesting and, you know, bold with the characters that came over from the first one to the second one, which is not done very frequently, and they've done it perfectly to be able to move the characters. It's just seamless from the first book to the second and how it's brought over. That the best experience is to read both of them, and, you know, they're such great, easy reads that you can just, you know, go right through, and it'll just leave you breathless. And like they said, Oregon will never be the same as it is. You know, how they just left it, the poor people in Oregon. So that's something that you definitely have to go and check out. There's a lot of other things that are coming up. You know, there's some news that, you know, everybody has to go and, you know, read about with the Barnes & Noble thing is still kind of out there with are they being sold, are they not being sold, and, you know, a lot of people want to go out there and see what's going on with them. I haven't heard anything new. When I do, I will definitely, you know, relay that over to you. But there's a lot of great books coming out for the summer. We have put some in our magazine here for our June summer reading, and coming up, you know, in July with our June magazine, we had, you know, Maggie Sefton and Juliet Blackwell and Janet Bolin. We've had James Grippendino in there, along with a lot of other authors, a lot of mystery in our June issue. With July, we're going to have, like we mentioned, Brad Thor is going to be back in. His latest paperback, Foreign Influence, just hit the shelves. He's definitely an author that you have to get on. Marcia Clark She wrote her book, Guilt by Association, and it's her fiction work, and she is the author, she is the lawyer that was the prosecutor on the O.J. Simpson case, and she's going to have an interview with us in the magazine, along with Matt Richtel. We also have, and I'm probably going to pronounce her first name wrong, it's Ailes Claire. She's a historical fiction writer with some fabulous books that we're going to introduce, and I'm sure a lot of people might know who she is, but we're introducing her, you know, maybe to a new generation. She's going to be in there. And then our debut author is Jennifer Hiller, and we still have some reach outs to try to get a couple other authors, which we have not been able to get contact with, and hopefully that works out. But we're trying to bring, you know, a big different people, you know, into the magazine, so everybody has a different kind of, you know, new authors to try to get a hold of. We're expanding our book review section, and we're trying to get as many different people as we can because the genre is just getting so big. And with all the ebooks and with all the self-publishing and everything, it's starting to get a little, it's almost getting a little out of control to try to bring it all down into a concise area where people can have a great, you know, way of picking out which books they're going to, you know, read. And what we always want to do is we want to hear from you. We want you to email us at editor@suspensemagazine.com. Let us know about books and authors that are out there that we might have missed and, you know, that we might not know about because, you know, we're always looking for more. There's like 3,000 new authors every year that come out in this genre, and we just can't keep up with all of them. The one thing that we have done on our website is we have Stuart Woods, Tess Gerritsen, and Steve Barry's excerpts of their first chapters of their latest releases out. In Tess Gerritsen's case, the book has not even been out yet. You can read the first chapter on The Silent Girl. You know, we have Boyd Morrison, his book, The Vault, coming up. We're going to have an excerpt from that, which is his latest from his best release, The Ark. Now he's got The Vault coming out. So we're trying to do a lot more of those types of things to give you an idea of, you know, first looks about what's coming out because, you know, get your tablets, get your e-readers, get your stuff because it's the best way to go out and get your books right now. I always say, why spend $25 on one book when you can go out and spend, you know, $25 on, you know, four, five, six books in the e-book way and you can just read that many more authors and that many more great stories. So, well, I'll tell you what. We've had a great Saturday. I am going to leave you here with one thing. We played this before, and it was such a popular thing that I'm going to do it again for this guy because his name is Andrew Peterson. The book is Forced to Kill, and it is an audio version of it's a five-minute clip of his book here, Forced to Kill, which you can find on audible.com. It's a great thing to go out and get because I love audiobooks just like I love electronic books. So I want you to listen to this clip here. Like I said, Forced to Kill by Andrew Peterson. Here you go.
Chapter 1. The light turned green. U.S. Marine Corps Staff Sergeant Eric Ramsland leapt into a moonless night. Sub-zero air instantly whipped his jumpsuit. A slow tumble offered him a final look at the C-130J's black form. Higher than Mount Everest, he stabilized into belly flight as he reached terminal velocity, nearly a football field per second. He glanced at the backlit GPS device strapped to his wrist, but it didn't register coordinates. His forward speed hadn't bled off yet. 10,000 feet below, massive cumulus towers awaited his arrival. He'd be penetrating their ghostly forms within the next 40 seconds. They weren't fully developed, but they'd still pack plenty of punch. He took another look at the GPS. Good. Coordinates were displayed. Using the compass on the opposite wrist, he made a slight course correction to the east, then a finer adjustment due south. On the western horizon, the faint glow from Port Lamar foreshadowed the vast city of Caracas beyond. This wasn't his first halo jump, but it could be the most dangerous. His orders were to secure tonight's target alive and transport him to the extraction point. Using the target's personal vehicle remained the best option, but he wouldn't know how to play it until he assessed the situation. Ramsland considered himself a human smart bomb. Nothing more, nothing less. Questioning orders led to doubt, and this mission had no place for it. Ramslin cleaved into the clouds, and all light vanished. Eddies bent and twisted his body. He stopped monitoring the GPS and concentrated on keeping his freefall stable. A wet chill penetrated his jumpsuit and the polypropylene thermal undergarment, forcing a shiver. He hated clouds, hated the cold, being blind. Things got worse when a violent wind shear jerked him onto his side, propelling him into a vertical spin. Without a horizon as a reference, he couldn't correct the hideous sensation of cartwheeling out of control. At least there wasn't hail in here. Being blasted by hailstones, even small ones, at 300 feet per second, would definitely ruin his evening. He summoned an image of his wife to calm his mind. He took slow, deep breaths and told himself to relax. Stable air would return any second now. Then, quickly as it arrived, the turbulence ended and the lights of Tobago snapped on. With a solid horizon, he arrested the spin, stabilized into controlled free fall, and checked his coordinates and altimeter, both good. He remained on target as he tore through 12,000 feet and welcomed the slight increase in temperature. That cloud mass had been freezing. He zeroed in on a large, dark area directly below. Mount Irvine Bay Golf Course. 11,000 feet. He visualized the layout of his Mark's house, plantation style, backyard pool and spa, interior courtyard, basement below the study. 10,000. Two security cameras mounted atop a 10-foot perimeter wall. Two more on the roof watching the rear yard and pool, one in the front courtyard. Two Dobermans patrolling the exterior yard. Three bodyguards, two working with the dogs, one on the inside monitoring the cameras. 8,000. Coordinates still good. He stayed on pure oxygen. 6. Thicker air now. 5 seconds per thousand. Perfect terminal velocity. 4. Temperature rapidly rising. 3,000. 2. Experiencing a slight ground rush. 1,500. Now. The multi-cell ram air canopy issued a whoop and burst open at 1,100 feet. His body jerked to a relative stop compared to his previous speed. He removed his oxygen mask and goggles and let them dangle around his neck. Next, he unzipped the belly pack, powered up his night vision goggles, and secured them in place over his helmet. He pivoted the device down to his eyes and adjusted the focus. The world turned bright green, resolving into perfect clarity. It was eerily quiet now, with the roar of rushing wind gone. He began a rapid spiral descent toward his LZ. At 300 feet AGL, he lined up on the fairway and focused on the exact spot he wanted. 10 feet above the ground, he pulled hard on both toggles, executed a perfect flare, and touched down in a slight run. Incredible. From 30,000 feet to sea level in under 3 minutes.
And that is Forced to Kill by Andrew Peterson. You can find that book in audio form on audible.com along with his other titles that he has out there. So I want to thank everybody today. I'll tell you, it's been a great Saturday. We have a great weekend. We have a lot of different shows that are coming up. We want to tell everybody to go and visit suspensemagazine.com to see the magazine on what's coming up. And everything else we have on the shows for next weekend. We're going to be at Thriller Fest in a month. Again, email us. Let us know. If you haven't got 4 free issues, you can get it just simply by emailing us. It's been a great time. See everybody next week. I'm John Ross saying,